access to?
We have to use the
Washington on the on Washington.
So, acting faculty members of MNIT, NNIT, Allahabad, and a very impressive gathering of what I am told, masters and the PhD scholars. Now, at the very outset, I must say one thing, that whatever I am going to say is purely from my own experience. As you might have heard, that I am in teaching profession since 1985, so now it's the 34th year, and during that long journey I have had several experiences, and what I am going to speak is all that from my own experiences. Probably many of these things you will find that it's not downloaded from Google or anything. And I have tried to divide this whole thing into two parts. That first part, I have prepared, is writing a good paper. Now, for the faculty members, that may be a little bit too simple, but for the particularly targeting the masters and the PhD students, I feel it is extremely important. Because this skill, that means how to write a good paper, is one of the, I would say, the fundamental technique or skill that you have to achieve if you want to get a good paper. Now today you can write any paper anytime, morning, and then it will be published in the evening. There are all these nowadays. But I will never encourage you to do that. I will always encourage you to publish a good paper which even after 10 years from now you can be proudly say that yes, that was the paper I published when I did my research in MNIT. So that's my target. Now start with this presentation with showing you a photo, and that photo is a historical photo. Now we all know today we talk about, you know, how much to write, and people try to put so much in a paper, how much you have worked for last 2 years, put everything in that paper, etc., etc. But what I am trying to show you in this photo is that a good paper is always judged by its content, not by its volume. That it has 8 pages, 10 pages, that's why it is good paper, not necessary. So, I am showing you this photograph. I hope you recognize the person on the right side. This is Albert Einstein. And the on the left side, what you can see, of course, that time there was no computer, no word processor, so all papers were handwritten. On the left side, it was the first page of the paper that he published on general theory of relativity. And you all know that changed the world. Initially, he has that special theory of relativity, which he extended later on into general theory of relativity. That published in 1916, when his age was 37, and this was 4 pages of handwritten, this pages. Now you can see that why I am talking about the content of the paper, not the length of the paper. But of course everybody is not Einstein, and everybody cannot propose something in 4 pages which will change the world. But we can always take that to our heart that yes, of course, we can also do some good work, and we can also publish a good paper. So with this, I am going to present it again into a subdivision. That first I will just briefly say a theoretical approach, which probably all of you know. But still, you know, sometimes in classroom we always say that when I try to teach something which is already known, it is better to have a recapitulation. That whatever we have done, let us recapitulate, and then again further let us discuss. So when we write a technical paper, there is a very well defined structure we have today. we will have a title, we will have an abstract, then introduction, literature review. Then two parts that I am going to say is probably not very clear in all the papers. That one is called problem statement. Honestly, please think about it, that whether any paper that you are reading, that is clearly written or not. Not all papers really state that what is the problem that they are going to attack in that paper. And second thing is called research design. One is research result, that whatever you have done, then whatever your results obtained, that is one part. But research design is slightly different. I will talk about that. Then of course will come the analysis, that means the results and the analysis of it, and conclusions and references. So this is the general structure. But now let us look at it, the overall outline a little bit. First of all, when I take title, what it should contain? It should contain the key aspect of the work done. Because why I am telling you, there are certain reasons behind it. I think many of you here have seen IEEE Explore. How many of you have seen IEEE Explore? Well, so at least 50%, but I am surprised that the other 50% have not seen IEEE Explore, being researchers of electrical engineering. If you search, go and search an IEEE Explore, what is the first result they give? You will see they will give a list, and only the title of the paper, author and the journal name will be there, and then there will be a link which you will click, you will get the abstract as well as the full paper. Now if you search any topic in such a database, what you will find is that there will be say 100 or 200 papers listed. Do you have the time to click all the papers and go through it? The answer is no. So typically what we do is that we look at the title of the paper, and then if we find that really it is your interest, then you click that PDF link and probably you download that paper. So therefore you can understand what is the importance of that title. Then of course the abstract. Probably the most difficult part of the paper writing is the abstract, which we generally don't understand. Why? Again the same thing. Because many a time, people only go through the abstract and try to get what is the essence of the paper. You understand that essence, that means what is the gist of that paper. And when that interests or makes somebody interested, then people go into deeper. Introduction. Well, this is probably all of you know, but again, this introduction writing is also not that simple. Typically we feel that introduction writing is simple, but not necessarily so. For example, in introduction we have to always say why this study is so important. You are going to publish, again I am saying that I am talking about writing a good paper, not about an ordinary paper. Now, why this study is important, why this paper is important, that has to be brought out. And who will do that? It's only the author. He has to or she has to write that introduction in such a way that people come to know that why this paper is important to the reader. Literature review, I will talk a lot more in details about literature review. But generally, again, all of us try to see literature review as a routine job. That in any subject, I have studied last 20 or 30 years, maybe 50 papers, and so we think that we have done the literature review. Actually, it's not the case. Literature review has to be done in a very, very scientific way. And that also I would like to tell you in detail. Now this is my own form that I always give my students. And when I talk about students, I am talking about particularly the research students, targeting PhD first and then the intake. I always tell them that any literature review that you are doing, don't come to me and say that I have read that paper. You are not reading a newspaper article. It's not reading a newspaper article, it's not reading a magazine article. You are reading a research article that might help you tomorrow in your research. So therefore, I always give this and I tell them that for every paper you study, you have to give me a one-page write-up on this one. What is there in it? The first topic is hypothesis. That means this is called the problem statement. This is another way of saying that this paper that I am writing, I am reading, that means that literature review part, first find out that what is the problem this paper is attacking. So very clearly you have to write, the student has to write it. Second is variable. Now, this is something you don't really understand, the importance of it. That if I am doing any engineering or science related work, there are a lot of variables we are dealing with. For example, there will be some independent variables. So we will vary those variables and get the result. It can be simulation, it can be experimental, but there will be always independent variables. That if I vary this one, what will be the effect on another thing? So we have to identify this independent variable and dependent variable. Now when I read a paper, just honestly you think, when you read a paper, do you ever thought about it? That what is the dependent variable and what is the independent variable in that paper? Probably not. But that is something we have to be trained in that we have to understand that. And there is a third type of variable which is extremely important to understand, that is called control variable. Because if I vary parameter 1 to study effects on parameter 2, there may be a parameter 3 which is affecting those two. Which is, for example, a very simple example is temperature. I am varying voltage and taking the current, but if I change the temperature, the results will change. So therefore temperature becomes the control variable. It is neither the independent variable nor the dependent variable. Now whether you have really understood that in our work, that which one is which variable, so that is again very important to write. Then measurement of variables. How have been this measured? Again, very important, because if you look carefully into those papers that what you are reading and you try to find out how have they measured those, and you will see very interestingly that if you study it in this way, 10 papers or 20 papers, I can guarantee you that after that you become an expert on this measurement, that you can tell others, okay, if you have to measure this, use this technology. But only thing is that you have to look into those information in the paper. Which, as I said, that the simple reading of the paper doesn't give this information. You have to bring out that from the paper and write it. Sampling strategy. The sampling strategy is extremely important. Say, for example, somebody is varying the independent variable and the lowest and the upper limit is there. But then how much is the intermediate difference that they have taken the results? That also is important. But have we noted that? Do we note that in the paper? I doubt. That because we are not trained in that way. These are what I am talking is, this is called a training. We have to be trained in this way, that this is how you have to study a paper. Then data source. Data source can be any different. It can be a simulation. It can be an experimental work. It can be a field work. It can be a statistical work. There are so many ways of generating data. Then the paper that you are reading, the which way they have generated the paper, those data. Just write it down. Then you will come to know that this is how the people work. So therefore, the way you will work, you will see that you will be greatly, you'll be in a very comfortable position, that this is how the work has to be carried out. Then experimental procedure. When you read a paper, if it is based on experimental work, please write down that what is the experimental procedure they followed. Because they must have followed certain procedure, the diagram is there, etc. So just write down the important aspects of the procedure. And again you will see that in your area, after studying 20 papers, you will be almost a master of the experimental procedure that what different people have used. And then you can come out with an idea that this may be additional input into whatever has been done. Then statistical or computational procedure, that what are these procedures that those people have used in their paper. Finally, what are the findings? Now what I am saying is that I have given you 8 points here, and what I ask my students always is, give me one page on that, nothing big, one page, just one page. But believe me, it is so difficult. If you read 50 papers, I ask only 50 pages, I don't require a Mahabharata on that. But I have seen that students don't do that. They find it extremely difficult to come out with this simple document. But there I enforce it. For my case, it is enforcement, you have to do it. If you don't do it, then I am not going to go and look into your work. You just go and give it back. And after that, when they really do it, I can see the change in the student. The student is completely changed. The way, the approach they have to take to their work, they have themselves understood. I don't have to tell them. Because after going to 50 papers, written by 50 different authors, where 50 different approaches are there, the student has completely changed. Then he or she, I find it so confident. Then I say something, then they start saying, no sir, I think this is the right way. Because I have seen people working in that way. They start giving clear direction. So, my request to you, try to do it. And again I am telling you, although this is only 8 points, and I ask only one page, it's not easy. Try to do it today itself, go back, take one paper, and try to do it, you will find it is not easy. You will have to spend maybe 2 days to write this one paper, one page of paper. But PhD scholar, I request you, invest this time, and you will see how good the return on investment will be. You will see that the rate of interest will be extremely high. Then, when I write a paper, that hypothesis or problem statement, now, this is actually an important aspect, that I have to make it very clear in my paper that what is the problem that I am going to attack, and this research design, I have to really tell the person who is reading it, this is how I have carried out my research, and these are the variables, I have varied it in this way. And so once you do it, you know what happens is, the entire process becomes almost transparent to anybody who is reading. Now, I give you a practical input again, why I am telling all this. Say for example, you are working for 1 year, 2 years on a particular area. So there is many things that for you it will be obvious that I have done this, so when you write, you always feel that it is obvious. Now, the important aspect is that if a good paper has to be published, you all know that it will be reviewed by 3-4 different people. And these 3-4 people will be experts from you don't know where, wherever. A good journal always sends it to all parts of the globe. Now, that particular person, first two things you have to understand. Don't laugh at it, but this is the reality. Do you know that 80% papers are reviewed when? The reality is they are reviewed probably at the airport. Now you might be laughing at it, but that's the reality. Because these experts, they are all busy people. And this review is not a paid job, it's all voluntary job. So therefore, all these reviewers, do you think that they are reviewing this paper during their busy office hours? No. what typically happens is that these people have to travel because of official work. And the best time is, you know when? Because you have to catch a flight or change a flight, there is a 3-hour gap in between. So you are sitting at the airport, nobody is going to disturb you because you are not in your office. Now you have 2 hours, very solid time. So what I do is, I also bring out that paper and then I read it and I send the report back. Now this is the biggest catch, that whatever you have done in 2 years, somebody will read it in 2 hours. And in that 2 hours, he or she has to understand that beauty of that work, importance of the work, and based on that, that report will go to the editor. And you all know that reviewer's comment cannot be challenged. So if the reviewer gives you a bad comment, then your paper is dead. So it is my duty as an author that I write it in such a way so that any reviewer, within that 2 hours or 2.5 hours of time that I am telling, that he or she will read that paper and he or she will be interested in your work. Well, it's a good work. And then only you get a positive feedback, otherwise you are not going to get a good review. So you have to understand this. And that is where I always say that a good paper writing actually is an art, that's not a science. Science is actually the research that you do, but when you write a paper, it is no longer a science. This is an art. And here you have to understand not only language, you have to understand psychology. Psychology, that means when somebody else is reading, he or she should be clearly impressed or influenced by your work, and that is how you have to write it. Now, this is something again one has to develop. It is never come in one day. It will never. You have to develop it. Then of course you have to present the analysis. Now analysis of course we all of us know very well. I will again talk about it much more details later. But an important point about conclusion. Because conclusion writing, I have seen in so many cases that as a conclusion is same as the action. You think about yourself, in most of the cases we do like that. That whatever I have written in the abstract, that same thing in a slightly different way, I write it in the conclusion. That's a very bad way of writing. Now, another important aspect I tell you that reviewer psychology, because here the psychology is an important aspect. Now, you have to think about it that you have an 8-page document which is loaded with lot of information. And I am a reviewer. And as I said, I am traveling a lot, or official meeting, this, that. So in between, I have some 2 hours time. So I have to read it. Now, where I will start? Do you think that I will start from line one and I will go through the finish? It never happens. That reviewers never do. These are the all psychological things you have to understand. What reviewers typically do is that, first they will always read the abstract, because that's a short paragraph. So that abstract first reviewer reads, and if the person is interested, oh, seems to be good, then next thing they read is the introduction. Because in that introduction part, they try to find out that why I said earlier that why this work is important, whether really you have brought it out or not. And once that part, that says introduction is one page, that one page that reviewer reads. And now if he or she is really interested in your work, he will only read the next 7 pages, otherwise forget about it. That really happens. If after reading an introduction I feel that this work is a very bad work, you know what happens is that my entire mindset gets negative. Then I just go through that paper and I try to find out what is really negative about. That's how our psychology goes. So please write those that abstract introduction and of course the conclusions in a very nice way by bringing out the significance and the importance of whatever you are going to present. And here I fully understand that in your paper you are not going to propose something like a theory of relativity. And
You know, not all of you or all of us have done PhD, which is a path-breaking PhD, right? Like, you know, Heisenberg's principle of uncertainty principle. I think how many of you know that this was the PhD of Heisenberg. Heisenberg did his PhD 28 years old, and in that PhD thesis he proposed the uncertainty principle. Now, of course, we can't expect that everybody will propose an uncertainty principle. But anyway, what we can do is that we can study what has been done till date, and we can say that we have added a delta x to that. If I can do that, that itself is a contribution. So, I have to write in a clear way that what is the delta x that I have added to the existing information. If that is not clear, your paper will not be accepted. I can tell you today flatly, very bluntly, I can tell you that you have to really bring out that part. Now, having said that, let me go to the part 2. The same thing now I am going to tell you in a completely different way, that what I do. Now, whatever I said is, this is the general structure. What I do for writing a paper. Before I start writing a paper, I collect all the diagrams, graphs, tables and photographs. Now you might think that, oh, what is there in it? But you will see that this is extremely important. Because if I have all that in front of me, I know exactly a rough idea about the structure of the paper that I am going to write. And I try to make these as complete as possible. You know, why is it? Like, after writing 4 pages of paper and then I suddenly find, oh, there could have been another figure, but that data is not here. Then I have to take some more reading in between 15 days, 13 days gone. And what happens is, whatever you have thought about, it has gone from your head. You start again. This is what typically happens to the paper writer. Then, of course, I try to identify novelty of my work. That is what I am saying. That delta x. That existing knowledge is this. What is that delta x I am going to say that I have done in my work? And of course, what is the best way to write? As I said, that this is an art. Then I choose a title. And when I choose a title, I never use a loose word, which I cannot establish. Because there are always, we have a tendency, particularly the Indians have a tendency to use some sweeping words. I always try to avoid the terms like new, novel, etc. Who told you that it's all new? Are you sure that what you are doing is new? Can you establish that it's new? You don't know. Because this world is so big, that whatever has been done elsewhere, you are not really knowing that. And I try to make it within 20 words. Sometimes I feel that the title is so big, it's like an abstract. That also not a very good way of writing a title. And of course, the title should bring out the significance of the paper. That I said at the very beginning, that when that explorer or the individual leaves, they give the title. So that should hit the reader, that reading the title, people should try to, I mean, get an idea. Because I remember that the readership will be attracted by the title, and the title guides my paper, and the sequence of organization. Sequence of organization means how I am going to write the paper, that organization of the paper, not the organization of the institute. Now I try to write the introduction. This is of importance, as I have already told, because as I told already, that reviewer will go through that introduction. So therefore, depending on the introduction, there is a high probability that either your paper will be accepted or rejected. This is a reality which is a fact of life. You have to accept it. Then I want to justify that why this paper has to be accepted. That means what is the significance. So I do not start with usual and known facts, which have been told several times, because reviewers don't read that. Because you understand that reviewers are experts in that, so they have gone through those papers several times. So if you just keep on repeating that what has been done in this, etc., etc., for one page, they will simply ignore that page. I try to state the relevant background, indicate the state of the art. State of the art means what has been done till today. That is called state of the art. And then directly address the issue. Issue means that what are the missing factors in the existing knowledge. That what is some gap? Is there some gap? I am trying to fill up that gap. Then I establish that my present investigation is important to resolve that issue. So therefore I can try to say that by literature survey we find that there is an opportunity where I can improve upon this. But to improve upon this, this is to be done, and therefore this paper reports this. That's all. If I can really write it in a very clear way, it's like almost a medicine. Reviewer will read it and will or she will get very excited about your paper. I try to avoid too old or too many references. Now there is a reason I will give you. I should not ignore significant contemporary work, particularly of the last decade. Now why? Because there is a very practical reason. In all probability, those authors will be your reviewers. Because who are reviewers? They are also researchers in the same area. But they have done the research maybe 10 years before you or 15 years before you. So therefore, if you are ignoring their paper in your references and that paper goes to that particular reviewer, then that person immediately finds, oh my god, I have done work in this area. He or this author has not referred that paper. So the first impression you have got. So please try to understand this psychology is so important if you have to get your paper accepted. Right? See, sometimes I feel that you find some group of people who publishes a lot. And I have seen the opinion people express it, those faculties, that they have a connection with that, that editor or something. So that's why their paper gets accepted. Actually, that may be true, may not be true, but there is not that only. Actually, this type of group where this publication culture is there, whatever I am saying, that culture is ingrained in that group. That the moment you go into that group, from the day one, you find people working in that way. So within 6 months what will happen, you become also trained in that. That this is how I have to do. And therefore you, without knowing that you get all those inputs, that how to get a paper published. So paper publication, again I am repeating, is not just doing a good work. You can do a very good work in 2 years, then you write a paper so bad that it is just thrown away by the reviewer. It has happened to so many researchers. So therefore please try to understand that. And in this, that is again the same reason in my literature survey I don't use strong criticism of previous work. Again the same psychology. Even if I find that work is weak, but I don't use strong words. Why? Same reason. He or she can be my reviewer. So I will place it in a very diplomatic way. That even if it is negative, I will put it in a diplomatic way. Why antagonize somebody who can be my reviewer? And finally, I do not make a tall claim. And this is something I have learned in my life. I tell you my experience, where I learned it. Long time back, in 1995, that means how many years? 24 years. 24 years back, I was in Technical University of Munich, Germany. That is absolutely top of Europe. So I was very much afraid there. Because I went directly from Kolkata to Munich, so I was afraid. But I learned many things there. One was that, one day I wrote a paper, and we are typical Indians and going directly from India, so I wrote that paper like us. And I thought that I write a good paper, because previously I have published some good papers, including IEEE. I gave it to my professor, and he was a very senior person and a very, very gentle person. So after a couple of days, he came back to me and gave me that paper back. And then he politely told me that, journalists don't say Mr., they call Herr. So he said, Herr Chakravarti, I have one suggestion.
I said, yes, write it, sir. You in your paper, please don't write all those superlative degrees.
You understand the superlative degree in English?
Best,
most, like we always say, this is the best optimization. This is the type of language you use. Now, Professor Steinwegler, who was a father figure of high voltage engineering, he told me very politely, please do not use the superlative degree, because you never know that you are the best. There may be somebody else who might have done better work than you. So you try to say in a comparative that it is better, it is improved, something like that. And believe me, I have never forgotten that after that in my life. I have never used those superlative degrees. And if my students write that, I immediately strike it off. That's how these words are out. Because there is again that very simple thing is that first thing is you don't know whether you are there, and second thing is that on that aspect your reviewer may have worked, and then immediately he will be antagonized that, oh, you feel you are the best. Try to understand all this. This is so important, and you know, this has helped me so much in my life for good publication later on. Then I organize my results, and I always follow a very logical way. I never refer figure 2 before I have referred figure 1 in my paper. This is something probably you don't understand, but it is a very common mistake. There may be 5 figures, figure 1, figure 2, figure 3. Typically, you should never refer figure 2 before you have referred figure 1 in your paper. So, on page 2 maybe you should be referring figure 1. Then at the end of page 2 you can refer figure 2, but not before figure 1. It's a very bad writing. These are something which a good reviewer always checks. This is called the writing, I mean the management of the writing. This is extremely important. And I always try to see that the result doesn't appear abruptly. Like, see, I am saying figure 1, figure 2, then suddenly I say in the table 3 this has been shown, and the table 3 is completely different from figure 1 and figure 2. This is called an abrupt jump. So then what happens is that whoever is reading, because you have done the research, so you know what is the relationship. But somebody who is reading it only for 2 hours, for him or her it's a jump, you know. Why suddenly you have jumped from this to this? What is the correlation? So don't do that. And I try to explain all the aspects of the furnished data. That means whatever data I am furnishing in the paper, the explanation should be there. I have many times seen that the temperature has been varied from 300 degree to 800 degree. Arey, why 800 degree you can move? Have you explained that this is the reason I have taken 300 and 800? Many a time, so don't do that. We just simply get the data. Now, this is called a good way of representation. What you need is only one line or two line extra in your paper. But do we do that? That is the question. And today, you know, this world is full of packaging. So therefore, you have to package your paper. Whether you like it or not, you have to package it. This is called dressing of the paper. So what is needed now in a scientific term? To prepare self-explanatory, neatly drawn, simple diagrams. I have seen many times, and when I am saying diagram, it's not that experimental setup, that is a separate thing. Diagram means a schematic diagram. So many times we give it. But then, thanks to that today I know, say that there is one medicine which cures all diseases. There is a term in English, this is called panacea. You go and check, the panacea means that if you take this medicine, any disease can be cured. So there is something in our engineering and technology called MATLAB, which can solve any disease in engineering and technology. So thanks to that medicine, we can have so many beautiful schematic diagrams, but then who can read it? You just copy paste from MATLAB to the paper, and it looks okay, but can I read it as a reviewer? Hardly. But as I tell, since you are the researcher, you can read it. You can understand. How can I? And who has not worked directly and reading only your paper. So we need that sort of diagram, very clear, simple diagram. to describe my measurement technique, instrument use, etc., etc. Now here I tell you something. It's so important we don't understand, particularly if we do a laboratory work. Whether you accept it or not, that this experimental technique has certain rules. We don't follow it. I have learnt again it in Germany. They are so scrupulous about that way of working. It's so different from us. I tell you one thing, that when I went there, I was very young like you. I was having black hair that time. So I was thinking that, I mean, how do I manage in that, you know, engineering means Germany. Engineering is not USA, engineering is Germany. And that to TU Munich. But you know, when I went there, and after 2 months, I have realized that in technical knowledge, I am not inferior to anybody there. And when I say anybody, I talk about the research person. I really speaking, I am not inferior to anybody there, as far as the technical knowledge is concerned. But, there is a big but. What is that? There is one aspect where I am so inferior to them that I almost felt ashamed. Any idea what is that? You cannot. What I felt is that it's the discipline. Compared to them, I was a completely indisciplined person. And in India, I was told that I am a disciplined person. But I felt when I was there that I am an indisciplined person. And when I say indisciplined, it doesn't mean only that I go to the meeting in time or not. We generally, you know, say in India, discipline means whether you go it in time or not. That is the first criteria that comes to our mind. The faculty, whether he goes to the class in time, student, whether they comes to the class in time, that is discipline. That is only punctuality. Punctuality is part of the discipline. Discipline is a much bigger word. What I found is that the way they attack the work, particularly the experimental work I have seen. For example, I ask you, if you take an experimental result, say today you do an experiment in your lab, do you repeat it after 7 days? I can tell you, you don't do it. This is not in Indian culture. Our students or our scholars, they don't do it. They do it today, they get a result. If it is a good result, they are very happy. But in experimental work, this is not accepted. I have learnt it in Germany. There it is a rule, you have to repeat it. First maybe 1 or 2 days later, then 7, 10 days later. And if the results are repeated, then only that result is accepted. Otherwise that result is not accepted. And I have seen so many times that it was proved that the result is not repeated. That means today you got a result, but 7 days later you did the experiment, you got something else. And then you have to find out that where something went wrong. Either it is the previous one or today. And when you did that analysis, you find out actually something which you never thought about. I have seen it happening in life. This we do not do here. You say, honestly you say, we do not do that. But this is something in experimental work, it's a mandatory work, that the result has to be repetitive in nature. And we don't do that. Second thing is not simulation. Experiment. So, simulation 10 times you will do, if the data input is same, you will get the same result. In the experiment, if you do it properly, your results will be repetitive, but it will never be same. When I say same means that if you take a step, apply a voltage and measure a current, it will never be exactly 3.1 ampere every day. It cannot happen in experimental work. So, there will be always a range that your results vary from say 3.09 to 3.12 amperes. And that is exactly how I have seen these Germans representing their experimental work. And that makes the whole world of difference to the paper. Because somebody who is reading your paper, the moment they see that this is how you have represented your data, immediately the quality of paper changes. That people understand that this group of people know how to do the work. Which is so important for a good work. So what again I am saying, that discipline in work
not only means that whether you have done it in time or not. Discipline means how you have really attacked the wall. Then in every paper you have to use tables and graphs. And I always try to mix a judicious mix. That means not only tables and not only graphs. Typically you have to use both. That means you have to give some tables, some graphs. And generally suggestion is make it a more graphical representation, because in one graph you can see many things, the trend and etc. Whereas in a table, every data you have to check, which people do not have always done. But then when you put the curve in that plot, for a comparison you have to put 3-4 curves on the same plot. Now a very important aspect comes is the labeling. How well you are leveling your curve. Because that will only show the real, the beauty of that curve. Sometimes we really ignore. I'm giving an example. I recently it has happened to me. One student gave me a graph, that results are okay, no problem. But you know, what I found is very interesting. The x-axis range, minimum and maximum was okay. But the y-axis, that whatever MATLAB or whatever he has plotted, the minimum was okay, the maximum was too high. So what has happened effectively is, there were 3-4 graphs, but y-axis is that much, but all the graphs were only within this one, on the bottom part. Because the y-axis scale is too high. That's a very bad representation of it. Although everything is correct, data is correct, graph is correct, but the representation is very bad. That is what sometimes we have to understand. And in that curve, there are certain regions which is maybe important. That brings out the important part. So why do I can represent the whole curve? I can represent only that part of curve in a good expanded scale and tell, see, this is the difference. So that's how actually graphs have to be properly represented. Many a times I have seen, and that is again very important, that somebody has given a table and on top of the table it is written table 1, nothing else. It's extremely bad representation. You cannot write like that. I cannot write like that. Table 1, then I have to say, what is this table? If I say figure 3, I have to see, write, what is this figure 3? And when I write that, it should be very clear. Then whoever is read this, immediately write, see, table 1, this is the table representation. So this caption is so important. So what I always try to do is that whatever figure or table I will give it in my paper, I just prepare it separately. Separately with the figure and the caption, then I just put it in the right place of the paper. So that I always have a document where all the tables and figures are there with the caption. And then when I write, I just simply put it there. That's it. Job is done. Finally comes the abstract. Now you can ask me that you started with introduction, this, that now you are saying abstract. Yes, because now I have already written the other part. Now I know exactly what is the gist or summary of the paper. So now I write the abstract and I focus on 2-3 things. The key aspects in 1 or 2 sentences, novelty and importance of the work, and the technique or approach in that theory or experiment, whatever it is. So mainly these simple aspects presented in very simple language. Once again my request is that you don't write, have to be a Shakespeare to write a paper. You don't need that. What you need to write is very simple English, very simple words. But your meaning should be clear. That whatever you write, the meaning should be clear. Now if you do that, you will see the entire thing will change. Start doing it, you will see. And I always try to say that what is my achievement quantitatively? You know, many times I find people write, this has been significantly improved. What is this significantly improved? Is it 3% improvement or it is... What is that significant improvement? Why is I significantly improved? Why can't you say that compared to the previous one, my thing is that much improved? That is quantitative. So that is something, again, I try to write as a quantitative.
And of course, I don't repeat things. And then how do I conclude? Because as I said, many a time, the conclusion and the abstract is almost like, same thing. So what I try to do is, not to repeat the abstract, and then to give my special comment, which I want to make in addition. That means, in addition to abstract, whatever I have written, some comments which are in addition. And to address critical issues relating to my work, fabrication, etc., etc., that needs to be stretched. Because as I said, that these abstract conclusions, people typically read at the beginning, then read the whole paper. And of course, some good possible future applications. Important steps not to be forgotten. Again, these are all practical things, nothing to do with other things. For me, it is like a rule that once the paper is ready, I just keep it in my drawer for 4 days. Forget about it. And then I bring it out and I again read it. And invariably I have seen, I find out that there are 3-4 things which immediately comes to my mind, which at the first iteration we have not considered. It will always happen. Do it. You will see. Don't take my word. You do it and you will see. Because when we are writing, now we are very much focused in that. We are always thinking in that paper. So we are doing it. Then you just keep it, do something else, it's from your mind out. Then you again take it out and read it. Suddenly it strikes you, oh, there is something is missing here. Some link is missing. So do it. It will improve the quality significantly. And many a time, give it to the co-authors also to read, because whether you accept it or not, if there are 4 authors, all 4 doesn't write the paper. Generally, only 1 or 2 will write the paper. So give it to the others and tell them to read it. And at the same time, give the feedback that whether they find it all relevant data is there or not, or is there anything missing. And many a time, if required, don't feel shy. Take the help of English also. Because it is true that we are not all equally good in that language writing. And as I am saying, that a good paper writing is like an art. And we may not be that good, all of us. But there is nothing to be ashamed. Don't be ashamed of that. We all learn over time. Nobody has become a very good paper publishing author in one day. It never happens. It happens over time. Then the most important part. What if my paper is rejected? This is very, very important. And I face this question very often. Then I very, in a lighter mood, I tell them always that, people come to me, they see my biodata and I have my website and I have a personal website. If you want, you go there. In the first slide it was there. Whatever I do, it is there. That's my publication, etc. So they ask me a question, sir, you have published 60 papers in ICBD transactions, how you have done it like all this? Then I just simply ask that, yes, that is true, but do you know that how many papers are rejected? That is not there, right, in that biodata? That's not there. It is, we never write that 100 papers are rejected. Now, that is a very important thing you have to learn in life, because any good journal, top journal, we always have what is called an acceptance ratio. That means if you send 10 papers, how many papers will be accepted? All 10 will be accepted? Any good journal, what will be the acceptance ratio? Percentage. Maybe 30% if it is very good. Now, which is indirectly, what does it mean? That if you send 10 papers, how many will be accepted? 3. Then 7 will be rejected. But then the key is that if you have to get 3 papers published, you have to send 10 papers. So you just, it's called reverse thinking. You have to really understand these facts of life. This is facts of life.
So when you see many people are publishing, please understand that they also communicate a lot of papers. And many papers are rejected and many papers are accepted. So if it is rejected, whenever my students, and just 1 month back my student wrote from Kolkata that sir, this paper has been rejected by IIT. I said, don't get disappointed. Yes, it will be rejected. But look at those comments. We might have made some mistakes. There is maybe some shortcoming. Go through it. And then, let us do something on that. If it is on our part, let us work on that. And improve upon that. And then rewrite and again submit. Maybe 6 months, 8 months later. And you will see the difference. And if not in that journal, I can find another very good journal where I can send it. Now, this is so important in our lives that this sort of acceptance of the negative comment about our work. You know, we have a very, very bad habit that we don't accept criticism. This is true for all of us, that if somebody says negative about us, we get very angry. That person is against me. Not necessarily, right? I can make a mistake. Something I have overlooked. Yes, that reviewer has pointed it out, reviewer overlooked it. Why not accept it? So this is another lesson you have to learn, that is acceptance of rejection of paper. And believe me, it is painful, because you are a research scholar, you are very eager to submit your thesis, get a job somewhere. So it is always a temptation that my paper will be accepted quickly. But when you are here, I put a question to you. You are spending a big amount of time of your life here. Now, when you are investing that time is a big investment. Please remember around. Only money is not investment, time is also an investment. And you have to get a return on investment. That is an economic term, return on investment. So what is that return on investment in an academic area? That is this academic output. And what is an academic output? One is your degree. But apart from that are these academic outputs. That is this paper, etc. And I always stress upon this point that I spent 4 years of my life in one academic institute. And if I cannot come out with a paper which I can go anywhere and proudly say that this is a paper that I have done when I did my work, then what I have done? Why I have spent 4 years? And please don't go into cheaper options available to you. There are, I know, a lot of cheaper options available, quicker options available. Please don't go there. I mean, nobody will give recognition to that. I can give you an example. This has happened just a couple of days back in a very important meeting, a very high-level committee where I was sitting with many very senior people of India, of academic institutions, and we were judging some of the even top level institute professors, including IIT. There one IIT professor's biodata was checked, and he has published quite a few good papers, etc. Everything, his H index is good, everything was good. But you know, his case was rejected. You know why? Because when that biodata was checked and their list of publication was checked, it was found that he has published quite a few good papers, but he has also published many papers in Iranian Journal of Technology, then such type of journals. And then all the experts were extremely unhappy, and then they said that this person is not political, sir. He or she, whatever he is doing some good work, but at the same time also some junk work, and therefore rejected. So believe me, this happens at the best level and at the best institute people also. So my request is that when you are spending such 4 years or whatever time you require, please get the maximum return on investment. And this is the best time. I really urge upon you. This is the best time. And I know you can do it. Don't have that feeling that I cannot do it. Everybody of you can do it only if you believe that you can do it. If you don't believe you can do it, you will never do it. Absolutely 100% clear. But you start believing you do it. My one student, one of my PhD scholars, joined with me in 2013. And in 2015, he was almost crying. Coming to me, sir, I have not published any paper in 2 years. What I will do? My this friend, that friend, in another laboratory has already published 2 papers. I said, nothing doing. You have to keep working on this high level of standard and then you publish. And then he completed his PhD in 2017 with 4 papers published in IEEE transactions. And the very next, within three or four months, over telephonic interview, he was taken as a postdoctoral fellow in one of the best institutes in Europe. He is now in Europe. And now he calls me over WhatsApp, video call, and he tells me that that time, if I had not followed your advice and I have published in some ordinary journal, today I would not have been in this position where I am today. So this is something to realize. It is initially very painful that you will see that some people are publishing and maybe getting a job in some college here and there. So you feel, the temptation is there. Please don't go into that. Have that quality consciousness in your mind. Bring it here, not and here. You will see the change. A paper will be submitted, either it is rejected or it is you will get a revision request. That is the best review that I get, because no paper is accepted in the first round. That never happens unless it is a path-breaking one. But revision means that your probability of acceptance is already more than 50%. That's why it was not rejected. This is the first thing you have to understand. So immediately you have to jump on it, that now this has not been rejected. So there is something positive in this paper, but there may be something also negative. That's why it has been returned back. So what we do is that immediately I am always very happy if it comes as a revision. Then we read all the comments very carefully. And we prepare, I have made it almost a mandatory that this revision, when it goes back, there will be 2 documents always. One document will be the revised manuscript, but there will be another document which will go to the editor, where every question will have its answer. And I make it sure that all questions are answered. It is so important. Even if you find this question is not pertinent, you have to give an answer in a very polite way. Because if you don't give an answer, what is going to happen is people take it as, oh, you have not answered all the questions. So take it as an exam where all questions are mandatory and prepare an answer. So prepare these 2 documents in a very careful way and then send it back. Many a time you may not agree with the reviewer, it is true, because many reviewers may not be really working in your area. So maybe he or she has given a comment you may not agree. So what happens is that you have to really point it out in a very, diplomatic way. That without saying that the reviewer is wrong, you have to say that this can be represented in this way, like that. And what I have learned is very important. I must read papers of good researchers in my field. If I don't read good papers, I am 100% now convinced at my age that I cannot write good papers. It is straight away my formula. I have to read good papers to write good papers. So don't read trash paper. Just like anybody who doesn't read a good English article cannot write an English paragraph. It never happens. It cannot happen. I can guarantee you. So I always tell that make it a habit. Every day, please read 1 English article.
And please remember, I am not talking about a book. What I am talking is one article. Means, whatever you are interested, say sports, say politics, say movies, take any one good newspaper, Times of India, Hindu, Indian Express, who writes well, and write and read one article per day, nothing big. Do we do it? I don't think so, we do it. Again, it is a discipline that every day I have to do it, right? It's so difficult. Many things is easy for one day or 2 days to do. Tell him to do every day of a month, he will immediately see it requires a lot of self-control that I will have to do every day. So, but I request him, do it. You will see the change. It has happened in my life. I always tell in everywhere that many people ask me today, sometimes, that in which way, where did you do your schooling? And I ask a reverse question, that you tell me where, what was my schooling. And most of the cases, people tell me that I am a convent educated person. But believe me, up to 10 plus 2, I studied only in Bengali medium. I have never went to any English medium school. And then I joined Jadavpur in engineering. Everything from day one was English. Everything. And I was at sea. But I have to survive. And I have to learn English. Because otherwise I won't survive. Simple. I found that I won't survive. And this was the technique I that time followed, that my area of interest was sports, and every day, that time the best newspaper was Statesman. Today it is not that popular. So that was taken, and I used to read one article, only one article of sports. It was so difficult, painful, headache. But I just kept on it. And I remember still today that after 3 months, I was slowly becoming very fluent. First of all, my reading became very fluent, that I could read that article in 10 minutes. Previously, it took 40 minutes to read that one. And second thing I found is that my sentence construction has changed completely. The way a sentence is constructed, I don't have to read a grammar. It already comes to my mind, because every time when I read a good article, that comes to you. So please do it, you will see the difference. I need to read, follow and learn what I am telling you. And if I am passionate enough, that means that what I am saying, if it is here, it is easy as well as exciting, but otherwise it is a painful thing. I should enjoy writing to be a proud owner of a good technical paper. That means, as I am telling you, that this paper will be a feather in your cap, and you go anywhere tomorrow in Europe, in US, in Japan, and you should be proud that this is a paper that I have published when I was in MNNIT. That should be the motto, right? That pride here, that self-respect here, this is so important. You have not come here to become a bank officer. Don't take that as part of your goal of your life. If that is the case, why are you wasting your time? You can do it in a different way. You are wasting your time if that is the goal. Try to think in a different way. Try to see that this is what I can do, and I believe you can do it. I have seen so many people transform once they started believing they can do it. Now I will take a little bit of your time to tell you some of the ethical aspects. That is part, one is the writing aspect, then the ethical aspect. Now there is a term today called plagiarism. It is almost like a disease. That moment people say it and people are always shaky. But now nothing doing. This word is there and we have to live with it. Now, plagiarism as defined by ICD. Now, by the way, what I am again going to tell you as my personal experience, when I worked as the associate editor of IEEE transactions, I had to go through many things. Now, IEEE first paragraph, just read three sentences, that is very important. IEEE defines plagiarism as a reuse of someone else's prior ideas, processes, results or work. Now something is very important here. What they are saying is, see, it includes ideas, it includes processes, it includes results, it includes work. It includes everything practically. So you cannot say that I have, you know, by the way, let me tell you, today nobody says copying. That is a very bad term. Today it is a call recycled. That something from that paper is recycled into this paper. So people, I mean, we have defined very smart words for everything. So, I mean, if I say that I have recycled something from this part, that is also part of plagiarism. Now, plagiarism covers everything. An intellectual property item, that's the rules of plagiarism cover. You just go through it, then you will be surprised. Books, magazines, journals and transactions, conference proceedings, photos, charts and tables, sometimes we think they are outside plagiarism. Multimedia presentation, today it is also included, and electronic media. Now you tell me what is left? Nothing. Everything comes under the purview of plagiarism. And whatever I am saying is not my word, then I will be plagiarized. So I have given the source at the bottom that from where I have copied. Right? This is directly taken from the plagiarism definition of IEEE. Now there is some aspects I'd like to give. You know, there are a lot of discussions on plagiarism. What are the basic factors to consider when plagiarism is evaluated? This is very important. We always talk about the amount or quantity. Then people always come out with the logic, oh, it's a small amount has been recycled. As if that is not plagiarism, right? Then use of quotation marks. You know, quotation marks means that which part has been, let us say, copied. Then appropriate placement of credit notes. Credit notes means, as you know, that we put the reference number such and such, that this has been taken from this reference. But the fourth one is the most important one. And that is most important for us Indians. I'm very sorry to say that. Because I attended so many meetings. The maximum number of plagiarism reports that goes to IEEE is from two countries, China and India. It's official data, so we cannot just ignore it. It's all data there. And in any meeting, highest level meeting, this data are presented and we feel very ashamed. Now, this fourth one is the most important one. It is called improper paraphrasing. Now, what is paraphrasing? Paraphrasing is typically what we do. That means, I have taken a paper from professor's paper, and then I am smart enough, so what I have done is, I have just rewritten it. Everything is same, but I have changed the words here and there, and then I am confident that it's not a copy. This is called paraphrasing. But unfortunately, this is also plagiarism, and it will be caught. This is something I would like to tell you again. What is author responsibility in plagiarism? I was the chairman of IEEE India 2017 and 2018. So I was responsible for whatever is happening. So I got, you can understand, a lot of such things. And as a rule, I have to investigate. So that was one case I can give you without giving the name. It was very interesting. We got a complaint. I mean, IEEE got a complaint. So they sent it to us that this is such and such conference in India. This paper has been published in IEEE Explore and this is the complaint of copying. So they sent both the paper, that original paper from where it has been copied and this paper. Then we made a committee, and this committee, as per IEEE rule, is that first we have to write to the offending authors that you have copied, that what is your justification. There are two authors in that paper. Then, after 7 days, I got a reply from one of the authors. I don't know anything about it. It is my student who has copied it. And I got so angry with it that mean, what is this nonsense that this senior professor is writing? He or she cannot write that. It is his or her 100% responsibility when they are the authors that they should accept the responsibility. He cannot say that I don't know and my student has done it. See, this is called author responsibility, so therefore now IEEE and any other, like Elsevier and everybody, they have made it a point that you know that you have to submit a, what is that called, IEEE declaration form or whatever, right? So, only one of us signs. But if you go through the fine lines, whatever has been printed, it is already mentioned that whoever is writing is the communicating author, but it means that all other authors have also given their consent. It's part of the rule. It is written there. So therefore, you cannot say that I don't know. You are equally responsible for that. So please remember that aspect. Then of course, IEEE defines this topic in 5 different levels. They know it, that everything is not same. So there is a lowest level, they call it level 5, and of course the highest level. So I'll just give you some of the brief ideas. Level 5, that is the lowest. What is given here is that credited verbatim copying of a major portion of a paper without clear delineation. Verbatim copying, first point please remember. Verbatim copying means word by word copying. Don't think it doesn't happen, it also happens. So many times I have seen. Word by word copying. But they have given credit, that means they have given the reference number. What they have not given is that they have not mentioned which part has been copied. That means they have not used those quotation marks. There are 2 ways to say this part has been quoted. Either you put a quotation mark or you make the paragraph size a little bit short so that this becomes separate, that this part is from somewhere else. So even if credit is given, but that delineation means you have not identified is part of plagiarism. Please try to understand how critically now these are evaluated. Level 4, one level higher, uncredited improper paraphrasing of pages or paragraphs. That's what I was trying to tell you. Here we will not give credit, right? Because I have copied from that author and I have changed all the words, so I will not give credit. So it is uncredited as well as without any, you know, giving proper delineation or anything. So, and today if you take all the cases of plagiarism, this is the highest number of complaints that come, that improper paraphrasing without credit. If there are 10 complaints, I can guarantee you 6 complaints will be under this one, this level 4 complaint. Level 3, uncredited verbatim copying. Now it is not improper paraphrasing, but it is verbatim copying. Up to 20% within a paper. That also happens, otherwise IEEE has not made a rule, right? You have to understand that. That when they have made a rule, means internationally they see all these papers, so this is happening. Then level 2, this is also uncredited verbatim copying. Up to 50%. Now who does it, you can expect, I mean, you can understand that 50% of the paper is copied, but I can tell you these are hardly journal papers. These are mostly conference papers. And conference papers published somewhere in, say, maybe one of our remote places, but now so many conferences are there. The unfortunate thing is that today is a digital world, so everything is in digital database. So anybody sitting in Argentina can find out that you have copied from that paper, their paper. Which when I was young, we had an advantage. That time even if I did it, there was no digital database. So people could not compare. So that time there was an advantage. But now forget about it. Everything is immediately could be identified. And then level 1. Now you will all start laughing. Uncredited verbatim copying of a full paper. Now you can say that IEEE is mad, that who is fool enough, is stupid enough that to do this. But now I give you the example that how this happened. Then one day it happened to me that one of my students came to me and submitted a paper. Then when I read, I said, hey, look. Hey, you gave me just some time back the same paper, the same thing. Now you are giving again the same thing. No, sir, that was given in that journal. That takes 9 months for review. So I am submitting it in this journal, which generally does it in 3 months. So if I get the review, I will withdraw that paper. Now what happens is, this review comes in 3 to 4 months, then I blissfully ignore that other one, and that also probably goes through and published. Now it becomes 100% copying of full paper. Right? So everything happens in this world. We think that we are very smart, but we will probably be caught. What are the actions now being taken, corrective actions? First thing is, there will be a publication of notice of violation of publication principles in the database. That means in IEEE Explore, there will be a notice published. Publication of, again, a notice of violation where the author and the specific articles have been found to be violation. But then important aspect is number 3, prohibition of publication in all IEEE copyrighted publication by the offending individual. Now this is very important. I will explain what happens. That means whoever that author, that may be a professor, that may be a student, they will be banned from publishing in any IEEE document. That means it will be conference, journal, everything. Now what is the effect of it? Try to understand. Say my student has done this one in 2012. And by the way, plagiarism complaint can come anytime. There is no time limit. That 5 years have passed, so therefore no plagiarism, no. So say for example, my student has done it in 2012, but the complaint comes in 2019. And I am banned. Now what is going to happen is that student probably has completed the work and got the degree and went out in 2015. But in 2019, I am banned from all these publications. Means now whoever is working with me, they cannot publish with me. Because their paper cannot be published with my name, because I am banned. Now who is covering something which has happened 5 years back, but now completely the covering will be today's paper. It's an extremely bad situation. Please try to understand how it affects the right. Then, of course, that any paper that you will submit, it will be immediately rejected or returned. Because I usually circulate a document which is a confidential document called banned author list. That is, they will circulate a list which is called banned author. So any paper which you submit to IEEE, they always first check that banned author list. If that name is there, that will be straight away rejected. And there is no second question asked. There are two actions which I always try to tell you. This is very important. One is called retraction, the other is called removal. That always final decision is with the chief editor. One is removed. That means your paper in IEEE means it is available in IEEE Explore. But then they say that this paper is removed. Now removed means if you search in the database, it's not there. That means as if you have not done that. So you cannot claim any credit for the rest of your life on that paper. There is something called retraction. For me it is even worse. What is that? The editor says this paper has been retracted. Retracted, then what they do is that paper will be available in the database, but on the back side there will be a watermark on that paper where it will be written that paper has been retracted. Which means that for the rest of your life, people can see that you have published a paper which because of this has been retracted and it will be available in the database. How much disgrace you can think of it? And finally, people always ask me self-plagiarism. That means my own paper copied.
Yes, it is also plagiarism because you have to always give credit. That means something I did 3 years back and I am using that one in this paper. Yes, you can do it with proper credit and that delineation. Because otherwise it is again the same thing, that you are copying something which has already been published. And then a big discussion always is that whatever copying or recycling we are talking about, where is it? Now, introduction, let us say. Now, introduction means I am talking about the previous literature, I am reviewing the literature. So there will be always a chance that that paraphrasing will come. Because you are reporting something which has been done earlier. So, please remember that in introduction, generally a higher percentage of this recycling is okay. But that doesn't mean I am telling you to do that. But it is generally accepted that a higher percentage in introduction is possible. Methodology. This is extremely important. Now, if it is your own work, say, you have developed some method. Will you publish only one paper from that method? Definitely not. You will publish many papers with many students. So therefore you have to report that method in that paper, in subsequent paper. So in methodology, we can always recycle if it is my own work. But as I said, always with proper credit. Similarly, if you use somebody else's method, you are permitted to do so. Because scientific methods are open. You can do it, use it. But with proper credit, you have to say that I am taking this person's methodology reported in such and such paper and I am using it here. Results. Here people are much more strict. Particularly the committees are very strict. Because as you know that when you are writing a scientific paper, the results that you are reporting definitely is your own result. But here also there is a catch. What is that catch? That sometimes you need to compare your result with another person's result to show that your result is better. So then you are using somebody else's result. But then again you just tell it that this is my part of the result. Say table, column 3 is mine, column 4 is somebody else's. But you tell that this table has been, I mean this result has been taken from that paper. So this is the a very structured way of paper writing has to be followed today if we want to face, or rather not want to face plagiarism. Discussion, same thing, that some text like recycling occurs because in discussion always we compare with others. Otherwise it is very difficult to establish that what is the significance of my work. Here actually, no repetition, as per no recycling is accepted. Because conclusion must be yours. Otherwise, why are you publishing the paper? If your conclusion is also same as somebody else's, then don't publish that paper. You can keep it in your lab for reference, okay, but don't publish that paper. Figures and tables, yes, there are certain rules. You can use somebody else's figure. But please take the permission of the editor, of that journal. There are rules, clear-cut rules. You write to them that this is what I want, giving academic justification. You take the permission and use it. So it is possible. But I tell you what we are doing today. Very interesting. Very interesting softwares have been developed. Recently I have been showed by a very intelligent person. He showed me, have you seen this software? I said, no, let us come see it. You know, this software is very interesting. You can use a scanner and a graph, then immediately that graph is changed into a, you know, online and on the screen you can see the graph. But that means it has been converted to a data table. But that data table can be something not exactly what that author has been shown, but his exactly graph will be there. Because you know that everything, if it is 100 to 1000, I can change it to 1 to 100. So there the software makes it. Then they do very interesting thing. They simply change all the, you know, scales. If the x-axis was from 1 to 100, they make it from 2 to 200. Y-axis scale change. this change, that change, and then whole class goes different. And then you put it in your paper. Now, if you look at it, it's a different one. Because it looks different. Scales are different. X axis, Y axis, everything is different. But now, point is, fine, everything goes well, fine, unless you are caught. If it is caught and then if the committee says, yes, it has been copied, then the result will be same. So it is always better that we take the permission and we print it. Sometimes we publish review paper, yes, that is also sometimes we do, and in review paper, everybody understands that editors are not fools, right? They have also spent 30, 40 years in the profession. So they know him that here there will be a lot of recycling. So that is always accepted as recycling of text. This I have already said. This is my acknowledgement, one of my very renowned person who is my friend. He is a fellow of IEEE and fellow of community. I have taken his help and thank you very much. But now the important part, if you have any question, and all is open, you are free to ask any question. Please feel free, anything you like, anything you want to ask me. Because I always encourage questions. Yes?
Hello?
Yeah.
Sir, during the study attempt